meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew. Loveline. Loveline. Coast to coast.
Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board certified physician, addiction medicine specialist. Tonight, our guest is Robert Crane. Robert is a writer and son of TV legend Bob Crane, and Robert and I, our paths have crossed before because I think he writes for Playboy oftentimes. He's a freelance writer, though, right, Robert?
That's right.
He writes for many publications, but does Playboy 20 Questions a lot. And I did an interview with him, Jimmy Kimmel's dressing room from Win Ben Stein's Money, about
two and a half, three years ago
or something like that.
But, the launch of The Man Show.
Oh, my God.
Oh, really? Was it for the launch of The Man Show?
Yes, it was. Because Playboy and Comedy Central put on a big party at the mansion for your show.
Right, right. Oh, I was there last night, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, oh, my God. So much to cover. I was at the Angel game last night.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Crazy, down five runs, seventh inning.
Great.
Ready to start heading for the gates. Oh, my God. It's too much to talk about. And tonight we're going to talk about Autofocus, a new movie that's came out, and is coming out in other places that chronicles the life of Bob Crane. And a lot of our listeners are young. They're not hip to Bob Crane. I've been hip to the story. For some years now, but we should first start at the beginning, I think, because, like I said, a lot of our folks didn't start watching TV until, I think, Small Wonder came on in 89. So let's just take it back. Bob Crane was a radio personality here in Los Angeles in the 50s and 60s or early 60s.
That's right.
And he's a good-looking, charismatic guy, and he made his way onto television as Hogan from Hogan's Heroes. He was the star of the show, and, like I said, again, very sort of affable, likable, nice-looking guy. Basically loved women, right?
That's it. By way of the Donna Reed show, we should mention. That was his big break.
Oh, really?
He had interviewed Donna
Reed. Now it's all coming together for our listeners.
There we go.
Now they can place it now.
They're going Donna who?
They usually break out in fist fights over Dinah Shore and Donna Reed, who was a better host from the early mid-60s, early 70s. But anyway, that debate rages on amongst our 13-year-old listeners. That'll keep going. We're not going to end that tonight. So Bob Crane goes on to have this very unlikely TV show, Hogan's Heroes, which took place in a prisoner of war camp in World War II in Germany, and basically is a sex addict, correct?
Well, it depends on your definition of addict.
They didn't call it that back then. No. I mean, he liked women,
and he was introduced to the new video technology of the 60s by a guy named John Carpenter, not the film director, through Richard Dawson, who worked on Hogan's with my dad. And they became friends with Carpenter, and Carpenter was the Sony salesperson at that time who was selling the home video camera.
Do you have any idea, by the way, what that stuff cost in 1966 dollars?
Oh, geez. Yeah. You know, $5,000. I don't know.
More than that, I bet.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I mean, I was thinking about this, and I think I was talking to Drew about this. Like, if I took my little digital Sony camera with the little flap that comes out, and the full color, and the digital, and the whole thing,
and I had that thing.
Yeah. I could have sold it to your dad in 1967. I said, I'll trade you this for your house and whatever furniture's in it.
Yeah.
And he would have been smart to do it, right?
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah.
Would have been amazing.
Yeah.
And then this stuff was bulky, too. I mean,
huge.
Big suitcases full of equipment and wires and the whole thing. So
and reel-to-reel tape. Reel-to-reel. People don't, they're listening right now going, what? Huh?
Right.
Reel-to-reel videotape?
Reel-to-reel videotape that you can actually edit yourself. You can cut it.
With a
which is what my dad did.
Wow.
And so So anyway, Bob Crane was the successful actor, and he was on a sitcom, and I guess he's making pretty good money. He's popular and everything. And now it's, I'm sure it was already easy for him to meet women with his looks and sense of humor before. You know, much like myself.
Yeah, with radio and all.
Right, radio, the looks.
By the way, when you were at Angel Stadium.
Good looks.
When Ned was pitching last night, were they going,
because I look like Rob Ned.
Yeah.
No, I didn't get any of that.
Not at the game.
But anyway, I know you think I should just put like a Giants windbreaker on douse my head with water
so I'll take
a sweat, put a towel around my neck, see if I can pick up some drunken angel trash in the parking lot. But the point is this guy now he's on a sitcom. He's going on a tear, right?
Yeah.
People know who he is.
Yeah.
This is his dream. And I saw, what was it? Not Behind the Music, but what show chronicled this whole thing?
True Hollywood Story. Annie Biography.
Last week, and apparently his wife, now his second wife was okay with this. You're from the first
wife. I'm from the first marriage, yeah.
And the first wife was not okay with this or tolerated it or what happened?
Well, at that time it was mainly photos and that kind of thing. He was always a photography enthusiast.
Right.
And, you know, my mom found out about this and went along with it for a while because she was the rock of our family, the hub, trying to keep this marriage and family together. You know, we're small town folk from Connecticut and we're out in Los Angeles, and she really held it together as long as it could be held together. And I think when my dad divorced my mom, he should have remained single. But he made the mistake of getting married again.
Yeah, and shortly thereafter, too, right?
Yeah.
To one of the co-stars or one of the players.
Clink Secretary, yeah.
Clink Secretary.
Yeah. She said, I'm pregnant, Bob. What are we going to do about it? So
he got married.
This is 1970. My dad's the star of a big TV series. And he said, well, you know, I've got to do the manly thing.
You know, it's amazing to me about these guys who are constant, like, sort of, they philander. I mean, it's in their blood. It's like they love women. You can't tell them not to do anything.
No.
But they always get married all the time, too.
Why?
It seems like a bizarre strategy.
Yeah.
It's these guys who are married multiple times. But his second wife, and I saw her interviewed, said she understood how it went. That was his deal. He still loved me. He was a provider. He was a good father. So I let him at it, which seems strange to me. But
today. Then they got married because of pregnancies, and if somebody was a sex addict or compulsive, they just kind of were just allowed to go do that.
Right.
Like they compartmentalized things back then.
Well, yeah. you gotta say...
I know you like it that way, Adam, but that's the way it works.
Hey, things were pretty good in that time, weren't they? We didn't have any terrorists up here.
Yeah, oh yeah.
No dirty bombs. Gas was nickel. For 10 gallons?
A bunch of happy prisoners and a kind of goofy commandant.
Yeah, everyone got along great. Once in a while, Colonel Burkholder would come into town and shake things up a little bit, but then it was right back to the good days. Even the German shepherds that were trained to kill were sort of friendly.
And goofy.
So now his second wife is letting him sort of pursue his muse, which is women and chronicling it.
Well, that was part of the deal. That was part of the deal of the second marriage. She said, we're going to have an open marriage. And my dad said, okay, sounds good.
Oh, she said it.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. She said it after she figured out.
She had no choice. Well,
yeah, after she was pregnant and said, you know, what are you going to do about it? And then he said, let's get married. And she said, well, let's make a big deal out of it. And they got married on the Hogan's Heroes set.
Wow.
And it was filmed with their crew. 35mm, you know, a whole day lost on this wedding, and there you go.
Wow. Now, see, in the True Hollywood Story, they did not mention, I don't believe that she was pregnant. Is this something, is there some controversy around this?
Well.
I guess one could do the math.
Well, the math is, the fact is, my dad had a vasectomy while he was married to my mom.
The first marriage.
Yes.
Right. So. So you're saying that she wasn't pregnant from your father?
No, I'm not saying anything. I'm saying
true.
He has
a
vasectomy.
Okay, so
Mr. Cochran,
yeah,
Johnny.
All right, but there's some suspicion in your mind.
Well, you know, he does look like my dad, so I have to admit that.
Now you're talking about your half brother.
Yes.
Who is the now? How old were you at the time when your half brother was born?
I was 20. I'm 20.
Oh yeah, because he's considerably younger than you are, and So now this half brother is the one who has the website, the
yes.
one who's showing actual right. footage of your
Real
father's
quick,
escapades.
What happened to your mother's marriage to him?
My dad filed for divorce from my mom after about 20 years marriage, three kids. And, you know, it ran out of gas. And my mom is now very happily remarried to my great stepdad, Chuck Sloan, for 29 years. So that worked out.
So now Bob then goes on. He's in his second marriage.
Yes. Does she ring in on all this controversy? I mean, she was the one that was actually an adult present when all this was going down, if you will.
Well, absolutely. She, in my mind, she is responsible for these tapes and stills and all that stuff getting out there.
Your mom?
No.
I mean, does your mom ring in on what went down?
How do you mean ring in?
I mean, there's all this controversy between you and what happened and whatnot. Does she step forward and go, you know, well, in 1959, here's what he was doing. And
no. No,
she
still speaks in the highest terms of my dad. She's very, very happily remarried, and she's absolutely moved on. You know, she's trying to get the kids to move forward. And we are slowly but surely, but I said to her, listen, we're still the kids of my dad. You're the ex-wife. You've moved on. We're not the ex-kids.
You have two siblings.
Yeah, two younger sisters.
How are they?
All right. Hey, Drew.
I'm just curious.
I know you are, but there's a whole story to tell here.
All
our
right,
listeners don't
right.
know what the story is,
all right.
And we're getting into the minutiae
all right,
here.
Go ahead.
All right.
Okay.
So now he's married for the second time. He says his hobby, which is filming himself oftentimes and filming other women in sexual situations, is in full swing at this point. He has a promising career, a movie career and that kind of stuff, yeah. which is starting to get underway. But his hobby is starting to bleed through into his professional life. And
right.
Companies like Disney did a movie with him.
Right.
And now they're starting to shy away from Bob Crane because of these allegations, these rumors, these innuendos that are going on in the background with the whole sexual life. Correct?
Right. Yeah.
So now Hogan's Heroes is over.
Mm-hmm.
The big roles, the big movie roles have stopped coming in.
Right.
And he's doing dinner theater. I mean, he's working, managed like a working actor at this point.
Well, part of the problem was the success of Hogan's, really. You know, everybody...
It was like Gilligan.
Yeah, every actor looks for that successful series. Hogan's was on for 6 years. It was a phenomenon. He was nominated for 2 Emmy Awards for Best Actor. It's still being played somewhere right now as we speak, 37 years after it started. Huh. And that was a blessing and a curse. The curse is that he's Hogan.
Right.
And he could never get past the Hogan role that was made for my dad. My dad was made for Hogan.
Yeah.
And could never move on from there, unfortunately.
Right.
But also successful.
It's true.
That's why we're sitting here right now.
Well, I'm going through the cast in my mind. I'm thinking of Schultz. No, he never did anything.
Yeah.
And Werner von Klemper. He never did anything.
He went back to career music.
And then...
Richard Dawson.
Richard Dawson's doing the Family Feud.
Yeah, made a ton of money. We have Mark Dawson here, who a longtime friend of mine, has a great website called The Unsolved Case of Bob Crane. He's totally into this case.
Well,
his dad made so much money, he doesn't have to work another day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, same with my dad. If you call 28 grand is your best year to date, making a ton of money, bum. But listen, so... Actually, LeBeau was doing quite well when I saw him in 1981, and he lectured our high school about the evils of the Holocaust.
Oh,
I thought,
really?
Jesus Christ, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
This is it? This is what we get? I watch TV. I see big-name sports stars coming to their schools. We get LeBeau telling us about the Holocaust? Jesus Christ, I'm going to sue my childhood, Drew. I'm working on this.
Yeah.
You can get in on this,
okay.
too. All right, so now...
Robert Cleary did have a long run on a soap. I think it was Days of Our Lives. I'm not sure.
Who was he LeBeau?
He was LeBeau on Hogan.
Right.
But he also had a long run on that.
All right. So now Bob Crane is doing dinner theater in Arizona. And
you missed the Bob Crane show, too.
Oh, we did the Bob Crane.
That's radio show.
Now, that was for MTM. Remember Mary Tyler Moore Productions, a huge production company. She had her own show, had Bob Newhart, had Rhoda. All those shows on the 70s, and they promised my dad that caliber of writers didn't get that caliber. He got, like, the fourth run.
Damn.
And
Fathers of the Man Show writers, by the way.
Yes.
Bottom of the barrel.
So they did the Bob Crane Show. It was a live in front of an audience show, and at that time it was a big bomb, which was 13 episodes. Remember that?
Yeah.
13 episodes was a bomb.
Yeah. What, now, what year are we talking about? 71?
75.
Oh, 75. Oh, yeah, because Hogan's Heroes ran for the six years.
Sorry, 71.
Now we're in the mid-70s. The variety show is not worked out, and it's time to leave Hollywood and basically hit the boards in Arizona doing dinner theater and that kind of thing.
Well, he's got a wife. He's got a nice home in Westwood. He's got a child. He's got a stepdaughter.
Right.
He's got to get to work.
And he's getting more hooked up with, in the character, it's Willem Dafoe's character in the movie, I should say, who's befriended him. He's got all the equipment. I'll give you the equipment. You use your face and your name, and we'll make a great team. Is that basically
what
the relationship was?
It's not as ominous as the movie portrays it to be. You have to keep in mind Paul Schrader, one of our great comedy directors, directed this. If Carl Reiner had done it, it would have been a comedy with drama. This is a drama with comedy.
Right. Autofocus, you speak.
Yeah. Very dark, very ominous. And believe me, my dad was Hogan. Fun-loving guy. If he were here right now, hey, come on, let's go. What are you guys doing now? Let's go out to the club, ba-bing, ba-bing. Let's go to the Classic Cat. I'll drum. We'll have a...
That's true.
It wasn't dark.
That's true as life. Except for he slinks home and has his wife kick his ass up and down Pasadena. Other than that, exact same life.
Same guy.
Has a glass of lukewarm milk and calls it a night at 12:27. So other than that...
No way, that's your life.
Same life. Okay, so now we get to the murder. Because he is carrying on. He's has his family back here. He's in Arizona. He's making his living. He's also going out, meeting women, filming women, doing his thing.
Yeah.
And one day they discover him in his motel room.
It was an apartment.
Apartment in Arizona.
Yeah, when you did the play at Scottsdale, at the Windmill Dinner Theater, the star of the show got his own apartment.
Just for curiosity, what was the play?
Beginner's Luck.
Do you know that one, Drew?
No, don't know.
It's about a guy who cheats on his wife. And gets caught.
Really?
Interesting.
So he's murdered with like a blunt object, basically. Yeah. Did they find out? They find the murder weapon ever?
No.
And
unfortunately, it happened in Scottsdale. This is 1978, and the Scottsdale Police Department was not prepared for a murder like this.
And nowadays, DNA and fibers and everything, this thing, they would have figured this out in a heartbeat, right?
Yeah, it was pre-DNA testing. And if it had happened in Los Angeles, let's say, it would have been solved.
And now, was he attacked in his sleep? He was in his bed?
Yeah, what it looks like is there was no break-in.
Mm-hmm.
Someone either had a key to the apartment or he let them in and then felt comfortable enough with them to go to his bedroom and actually go to sleep.
Right.
And they found him in a sleeping position on his side, hit in the head twice, and that was it. Nothing stolen.
Said here he had a cord around his neck, though.
Yeah.
Was that to kill him? I mean, if he was not dead from the trauma?
There might have been that death gurgling sound that apparently happens. I've never been around a person who's dying, but they say there's certain noises that come out. And someone fought to get this cord. Interestingly enough, a cord from the videotape machine.
Right.
And wrap it around his neck and make sure that there was no more oxygen.
And the only suspect has always been this guy, right? The guy who was providing the equipment, his sort of partner in a sense.
Well, they went for John Carpenter from the beginning because he was there when it happened. Some people said that they had a falling out, and my dad was moving on with his life and was going to get away from this kind of thing.
Is that what the movie's about?
What it is? The movie, to me, is actually part two of Carnal Knowledge. Remember Carnal Knowledge, Jack Nicholson and Art Garfunkel?
Oh, yes. I beat off to that many times in high school because Anne Margaret was in it.
Or as Archie Bunker said, he thought it was a religious film, Cardinal Knowledge.
So,
this, to me, is part two of Carnal Knowledge. This is like the two guys move on into the 60s and 70s, and it's the darker, with videotape. Little Boogie Nights in there, and
some of that. And it got two big thumbs up from Ebert and Roper. Yeah. Roper. Yeah. Roper. And it's been very well received. And, yeah. And I've seen Kinnear wearing the Hogan's Heroes getup and everything. And yeah. It's uncanny.
That was my dad's jacket.
Actually his jacket.
Yeah. I still have the Hogan jacket, and I met with Greg and said, you know, if it fits, if you want to wear it, wear it.
So now his partner, for lack of a better term, is the only murder suspect. And he goes on, there's suspicions for years and nothing really. And then they try him a few years back, right?
They try him finally in 1994, John Carpenter, 16 years after the fact. Evidence has been lost. Evidence has been misplaced. As I said, the Scottsdale Police Department was ill-prepared for this whole happening. A new DA is in that area, and they said, listen, we got to do it now or never. And so he goes for it, and the prosecution does their best to present their case, but there's things missing, and, you know, it just wasn't enough to...
So you don't believe Carpenter killed him?
Well, the more, you know, I went with it at the beginning because everybody else did. And then as the years went by, I kept thinking, who gained from this thing? John Carpenter didn't gain anything. He lost his buddy. He lost his little road buddy.
Right.
He gained nothing. You know,
right.
There's some other jealous boyfriends and husbands that should be looked at. There's,
well, sure. I mean, if you think about it, motive-wise, and this was not a mafia hit. This is not an assassin's work or anything. This was seemed to me like a rageful, spontaneous action that went on. You're out there screwing around with chicks. You don't know if they're married. You don't know if they're boyfriends, you know, whatever.
Somebody's going to get pissed.
Somebody eventually is going to come in and do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
It's a crime of passion,
It makes perfect sense. They always do that thing where they go, and this Carpenter evidently is not a very sympathetic character, so I think that's part of the problem. But they always do that, well, he was jealous that his friend was going to leave him. So he killed him. You know, it's like, really? I don't know.
I've never seen that happen.
Doesn't feel like it's sort of what's in it for you. Okay, now for sure he's left. He's
unless
dead.
There was some criminal activity they were involved in that he was going to, you know, blow the cover on. That's the only time I ever see that kind of thing.
My dad didn't take drugs. He didn't, you know, he wasn't involved with the mob, you know.
Yeah, then so now he was found innocent, right?
Yes. He was acquitted,
He was acquitted, and to this day, the case remains open.
He died.
John Carpenter died in 1998. The case remains open, but I, for lack of a better word, it's dead.
Right.
Dead case.
Okay, so Robert Crane is our guest tonight. We've got to take a break. Never done this before, I don't think, through the entire thing. But it's such an interesting story. And
the
movie everywhere. And I know a lot of our listeners aren't up to speed on this. And we are going to take some calls and do all that. But I did want to sort of lay the whole story out so people knew where we were.
Have we brought everybody down? You think,
Well, I mean, it is, it's not exactly, a feel-good conversation or movie, but it's certainly compelling.
Yeah.
And it's certainly fascinating. An idea that that they never did find the guy who did this and all the video and the whole everything. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll take your calls. We'll talk more about this, and we'll do all that after that. Hey, everybody. Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. All right. Robert Crane is our guest tonight. He's son of Bob Crane. He is technical advisor on Autofocus, which is a new movie starring Willem Dafoe and Greg Kinnear.
Along with Mark Dawson.
Along with, but Mark Dawson's not in the movie.
No.
Okay, that's okay.
But he's co-technical advisor.
Right. And this movie is out as we speak. It's a very interesting story. And, true, 90% true when you see the movie, 75% true, I mean, to the best of your knowledge. You weren't there at all, every event, but, I mean, when you see this movie, are there parts of it that you say, please, that's, you know, artistic license?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I'd say about 70% true.
But certainly the main beats, Hogan's Heroes and Murdered and Addicted to Sex and all that,
Can't argue with that.
Right.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to the phones and speak to Cameron, who's 14. Cameron?
Hey.
Hey.
I was wondering, Well, next Friday, I'm going over to my girlfriend's house, and I'm going to finger her, and I was wondering... Mm-hmm.
A date to finger.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, nice.
And I was wondering...
Young love. Isn't that nice?
It's beautiful.
What would be good or what feels good for her?
I could just see young Cameron in his white sport coat with this red carnation and his finger in finger all waxed up,
yes, all
ready to go.
Scrub clean.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't you just send the finger along ahead of you and you stay home in case there's trouble? Dad walks in. You're safely at home playing Xbox.
The
finger scampers across the room.
No,
I see.
And you want to be there, okay.
You'd like to be there attached to the finger?
Yeah.
Interesting.
How did this, I'm just curious, how did the sort of conversation go where you made this date? You know what I'm asking?
Yeah, well, she inked him in for fingering on the 3rd. Yeah. She's like, well, let me check my calendar. No, the 3rd, no, during the afternoon, I'm down for cornholing and a face effing. And then, I can squeeze you in for fingering.
And 14,
sure.
14, ladies
and gentlemen.
Thank you, Adam.
Okay.
All right, come on.
All right. So, Cameron?
Yeah?
Yeah, answer Drew's question. How did this work out that you know in advance what you're going to get? Because we used to have to spin a big wheel. We never knew.
She told me what she's done before with other guys, and so she invited me over Friday, and her parents aren't going to be home, so...
So you figure...
I just assumed.
A little diary about her past is the green light for a go-ahead, huh?
Yeah, well, she did the math. Folks out of town.
How old is she?
14.
Who is she staying at home by herself?
Yeah.
What? But they're not going out of... Are they going out of... the state, or they're just going out for the evening kind of thing?
I think they're going out for the evening.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to get caught.
Yeah, you will. So, Cameron.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen. Are you in love with her?
Oh, yeah, 14.
Well, what does he... Do you think you're in love with her?
No.
No? You're not interested in her?
No, I am. We've been going out for 3 months.
All right. You should be in love by now at 14.
I should.
No.
No, you should think that, though. At 14...
I understand you did. But at 14, it's reasonable to be able to have enough sort of self-awareness to go, I like this.
What I'm asking Cameron, is he serious about this girl, or is he just going to let his fingers do the walk and then upset her?
Am I serious?
Are you serious about her?
Yeah, I am.
That sounds as arousing and utmost enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Take her to see Autofocus.
Oh. Yeah.
You'll be masturbating for the rest of your life.
I imagine he's not old enough to get into that.
No.
That's my guess.
I'm assuming he's going to be masturbating for the rest of his life.
Either
anyway,
way, yeah.
I'm doing my own personal math. Let's see, 14, 38. So far, on track for the rest of my life. Yep. Check.
All right, Cameron, just be careful how far you get with this girl physically. It's gonna create a bond between the two of you that you're already telling us you may not be really wanting to.
Yes, look out for her, for her delicate psyche.
Please.
Bella?
Hi.
Hey, you're 18.
Yeah.
What's up?
My question is for Dr. Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Drew, when I was seeing my last boyfriend, we started, having sex and stuff, and I never used protection. And we had been going out for like a year and a half or something. And I was wondering, what my chances of getting pregnant are since I haven't already.
Did you have sex every day with this guy?
Just 4 or 5 times a week, yeah.
Okay, so pretty close.
And what, no protection, huh?
No.
Why not? What's up, genius?
I'm retarded, I guess.
Oh, that's good enough.
But you know what? See? Yeah, catch 22. Those who admit they're retarded...
We're done with them.
...are not retarded.
Yeah.
They've now been upgraded to idiot.
But what they've effectively done is diffuse you, though. You're not coming after them when they admit it.
I know. I'm like a cop trying to beat a confession out of somebody with a hose, and they confess.
Yeah.
Well, I stop beating them.
That's right.
All right. You want a cup of coffee, a lucky strike? What do you need?
But you're right. It is a catch 22. She can't be that retarded to have the insight to know.
Right.
All right, but that's a special kind of intelligence, though, insight, though, right?
Well, it's just more that I didn't really care,
Okay.
I mean,
but right, you care now?
No.
How come? Why don't you care?
Well, I'm not in a relationship.
Yeah, but why don't you care if you're pregnant or not?
Because I kind of want to.
Why?
I mean, because, I don't know.
You want to destroy another person's life? Like, yours was destroyed by your parents?
No, my life was not destroyed by my parents.
Well, somebody screwed up a little bit.
Yeah. So what, do you have
I don't know. I just, I don't know. Just.
How old was your mom when she had you?
She was fine.
How old was she when she had you?
She was...
We'll
well
do
into her 20s. She
well
was
into her 20s.
23.
How about when she had her first child?
She was 21.
21. There we go.
When she had you or her first child?
Her first child.
All right.
She's just about on track here.
Grandmother.
Yeah.
All right, so Bella.
Yeah.
You can get pregnant. Are you asking if there's something, or if you're sterile or something like
well,
that?
Well, you know, you'd think by now I would be.
Have you ever had any pelvic infections or anything like that?
Vaginitis?
Okay, like, no, that wouldn't be that. Do you menstruate normally?
Not really.
Do you take any medications?
No.
Okay, so there's it's possible that if you're having irregular periods, are you overweight?
No, not at all.
Not at all. There's something called polycystic ovarian syndrome, and there are other sort of what are called anovulatory problems that can make it so you don't really have a fertility problem, but you may have things that affect your ability to get pregnant.
Yeah. So you go to the gynecologist.
Yeah, you've been sexually active.
Well, I already have. Like, I just went like a couple weeks ago because I was having so much problems during my cycle. Like,
all right. So did they discuss ovulation or problems with pregnancy?
No, not at all.
All right, you're probably not going to have any problem. It certainly could be luck that you didn't get pregnant. Could be him, right? And it also could be you could have some special needs around the time when you do get pregnant, but I would not assume you're having fertility problems.
Okay.
Don't make that assumption.
All right. Now you get on that pill for the next
please, or at least
you know what? I tried it, and I can't. My
all right, then. All right, then keep the morning after pill available. The emergency.
Well, how's she going to know? She's going to take the thing six times a week.
No, good point.
No. I'm not in a relationship right now.
All right, but listen. You're going to be in a relationship by Thursday.
Probably.
Or at least in a situation where you could get pregnant. I don't know if it's if you're calling it a relationship or not. You got to get on some birth control.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, screwball. Where are you going to junior college?
No, I took a semester off.
And then off to junior college?
Then I'm off to junior college.
Yeah, there we go.
This is worse. This is pre-junior college. This is, if all goes right, I'll end up in junior college.
Yeah.
That's worse than the people actually going to junior college. It's like, I'm planning on going to prison. This is worse than the inmates. You have a choice. You're on the outside now. All right.
All right. Thank
enjoy
you.
I know junior college material when I hear it on this show. This is her greatest dream would be to one day attend junior college.
Well,
by the
way,
let me explain junior college to everyone. No planning involved. That's why it's junior college. You show up stoned on a Tuesday, you're in class Tuesday afternoon. That's how it works. They don't care if there's a hatchet sticking out of your middle of your back. They don't care if you're one of the kids from Columbine. They don't care if you shot at classmates. They don't care if you don't speak a lick of English. Herpes all over your face. They don't care if you have lice, crabs. They don't care. They take you right in. That's what it is. It's a flop house for students.
Were you as traumatized by the LA Unified School District as Adam was? Or did you go to LAUSD?
Oh, yeah. Public school my whole
life.
Did you
go to junior college after that?
No, I went to USC.
But you were not traumatized by the LAUSD the way Adam was. Adam was injured.
Yeah.
He's impaired. Because
where'd you go to high school?
Taft High School, Woodland.
Wow.
Well, that's a good high school.
Yeah.
But we were underneath power lines. So I'm affected.
So half his class has cancer now.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Yeah. I'm just saying, junior college, please, nothing to aspire to. Do not.
I have a simple answer for all your callers tonight. Go see Autofocus, and you'll never want to have sex again. You won't have to call in.
Does it? I heard it's for all the nudity and sex, it's not an erotic film.
It's not. It's Paul Schrader, who was a former Calvinist, and I can't really explain Calvinism, but it's pretty strict.
It's Puritanism.
Yeah.
Right? It's like pre-Puritanism.
Yeah. He didn't see his first movie until he was 16 years old, and he wrote Taxi Driver and Raging Bull and all these things.
See what happens.
So he's a sociopath.
So this is his thesis on sin and celebrity and temptation. And
oh, how
all that.
Interesting.
And he just happened to use Bob Crane because that's how the movie got made. But he's not really interested in Bob Crane. He's interested in these two guys and their relationship going through the sexual revolution of the 60s and 70s with videotape.
That is really fascinating.
Wow.
Is he talking about his thesis?
Yeah. You should have Paul on as a guest to talk about psychoanalysis.
Interesting.
We'll take ourselves a little break. Robert Crane is our guest tonight, son of acclaimed sitcom actor, Bob Crane. We'll talk more to you and more to him, more about the movie, all after this.
Hey, everybody, Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Tomorrow night, we got the chicks from That 70s Show. Tonight, we have Robert Crane, who is son of Bob Crane, Hogan of Hogan's Heroes. And also a freelance journalist who does 20 questions for Playboy oftentimes, did an interview. Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And then only took you 40
minutes. No, that was my...
Oh,
it was
okay.
A little different. It was a new twist. I've never done that one before.
Interesting. Yeah.
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 Yeah. You like that, huh?
And yeah. Drew, every night, he tries... You know how The Simpsons, the beginning of The Simpsons, there's a new opening. They all hit the sofa and it's a new...
Something weird happens.
Something new every show. Drew figures out new ways to make noise
with my
on the show that don't have to do with his mouth. It can't be a word.
No.
It can't be a sound.
No, and I can no longer use the desk. Yeah. I used that for years.
Don't! Yeah.
Because you put a pad down here.
Yeah. He does. I do find that the coffee mug becomes a crutch for you. What do we have to get you? A Nerf coffee mug? So like a retarded 3-year-old so you can drink out of?
Right.
One of those kids with baby sippers?
More importantly, I need like the mitts that a retarded person wears.
You wear oven mittens, a hockey helmet, and we get you a Nerf coffee mug.
Just put the mic in on.
And you just squeeze the mug into your face. Yeah. That's it.
Not like a hamster. They'll lick.
All right, quiet down.
That's how some guys order drinks. They go, you know, do that. Mm-hmm.
But tonight I hit my coffee cup with my wedding ring. It was not with the mic. That was the mic.
I wasn't looking.
Well, I'm developing new ways to bother you with that.
Interesting. So anyway, Robert is here tonight. Robert does freelance writing, and in this next month's Playboy,
it's out right now.
It's out, just out.
Yep.
20 questions with Greg Kinnear, who plays his father, in autofocus, which is out in theaters as we speak. Kyle.
Yeah?
You're 14.
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, I guess, you know, I kind of went over to the house today. We kind of watched a movie, and we kind of got the woo-woo fooling around.
You and your girlfriend?
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And I guess she said that she was just kind of feeling uncomfortable. And I guess she kind of said that after we got done or whatever, you know, we went out and walked the dogs, and then she just told me that she wanted to be friends, and then she said that she didn't even want to be friends because she felt uncomfortable around me for some odd reason.
Mm-hmm.
And two reasons I can only think about that is because, for one, I think when she was in kindergarten, a kid de-panted and kind of told her to suck his dick.
Ooh.
And the other thing...
Watch the language. Yeah. De-panted.
Oh, sorry.
He took her pants off?
He took his pants.
And then had her do that.
No, she didn't, but...
When a guy drops his pants, you refer to as is de-pantied?
Well, that's just something I read from my school thing.
Okay, keep going. Don't derail him, Adam, please. Please.
Okay. All right.
All right, there we go. And what was the other thing?
I guess this 18-year-old who was babysitting her. But yeah, said daycare kind of pulled down his pants the same thing.
He de-pantied as well.
All right, so she's been sexually abused a few times then.
Okay.
All right, and so people that have been traumatized like that can very easily re-experience those kinds of traumas if you're not really...
but she's dumping him anyway.
But it may be, it sounds like they were kind of, things are going along, all of a sudden he kind of makes his move and she's like, whoa, that she's freaked out.
Well, actually it's more like her because she kind of was, I guess he's kind of the aggressive type, you know. So it's kind of more like her. I guess.
But still, if somebody's been badly sexually abused, they sometimes will respond to just about everything.
Wait, well, first off, I was just thinking his precious mug is back, so it's time.
My precious mug, yes.
Yeah, it's time to break it out. There you go. And number two, we're talking about Kyle, who was with her, right?
Yeah.
Right. And then, because Kyle at one point said he did whatever, she dumped Kyle. She's not interested in Kyle.
Some Kyle after them, they're having a physical encounter. And what I'm saying is sometimes if he's not sort of...
Don't help Kyle make his case about having to cure her so that they can get back together.
You're right. It doesn't matter.
That's right. Yeah. Kyle?
Yeah?
Whatever the reasons are, she broke up with you.
And that's that.
She means it.
Good point.
It doesn't matter if they're valid or not.
Well, I mean, should I talk to her mom about that? Or?
No.
That's what I'm worried about.
No, you let it go.
You're broken up, Kyle.
Okay, all right.
That's it. And I are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, don't hang up yet, buddy. Okay. I know there's...
lots of girls in Anchorage.
There are tons. The place is teeming with broads.
Isn't that where you are, Anchorage?
Yeah.
Broads and Laplanders. That's okay. Those are the two things they have over there. All right. You ever run over a moose or anything like that? A couple times a week?
What's that? Our house is teeming with moose, usually.
It is.
Your house is.
The inside of the house? You have a moose infestation problem?
No.
We have ants at our house.
We have mooses. Really? I know. You leave out like a caribou carcass and they come out at night.
No, they don't like that. They just like grass.
Oh, I see.
Swamp.
All right. So, yeah, they're vegetarians. So, Kyle, really, do you have moose around your house?
Yep, we live right down by Rabbit Creek, which is kind of a stream near Anchorage.
They're dangerous, aren't they?
Well, actually, it's kind of because they've actually kind of learned how to just live with us. You know, they don't really spook that easily anymore.
Did he say Rabbit Creek?
Rabbit Creek.
Do you hunt screwy rabbit there?
No.
All right, Kyle. Listen, you find yourself plenty of women, and if not, maybe you get a hold of a moose.
All right, but be very quiet.
It must be very quiet. Oh, please. You're right. I should have been thinking ways to make him say rabbit hours ago on this show. Drew, what's wrong with me? I lost my edge.
You lost your edge.
I did. I get all sidetracked with the moose and stuff. And
that was interesting.
Yeah.
Poor Kyle. He got dropped.
He got dropped. And here's the whole thing, guys. And I've done this, and I'm sure Robert has done this, and I'm sure Drew has done this. Everyone's guilty of this, especially if you have a superior intellect, as we all do, clearly. Yeah. you get broken up with, and you have to dissect it.
You build a case.
It becomes like a court case. Well, if you can prove that you're innocent, and this all has to do with some trauma in the past, well, then she'll have to accept you back into her life. Well, the reality is the more trauma and the more stuff that went on, the stronger her case is in her mind, and it does not matter if you can get O.J.'s jury to support you. It doesn't matter. You're gone.
But it speaks volumes about the male emotional intelligence, that all men think that way until they're about 28, is that, you know, it's all sort of a game process. You know, how do I outwit this game?
Yeah, and, you should be playing that game when you're in the relationship, but once you break up,
the point is that men very much have a weak emotional intelligence. That's why women don't play that particularly. They play different games. They play games using emotions.
No, we're smart. Women. We use logic. We think they're going to respond to logic, and it's like arguing with a three-year-old or an alligator. You're going to get bit or crapped on. It has nothing to do with logic. I mean, our problem is treating women like human beings.
I see. Yes.
Andrew?
Yes?
You're 18?
Yes, that's correct.
What's up?
I had a question for Robert.
What's going on?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just curious. There's a website, Bob Crane, your brother Scotty runs. Is that correct?
Nice plug, Scotty.
Yeah, I think that's a... And that's an interesting... Oh, boy. We should get into that. Briefly.
Well, you don't know that was him.
It was a plug. It was a shill.
Yeah. Right.
If it wasn't him, it was a guy calling.
I thought it was somebody going to try to
give a plug
to create some controversy around that stuff.
What's that?
Anyway,
you want to keep him on the line?
No.
I'll give you $10. Call in.
Yeah. If I thought now let's explain that to everybody. Scotty, who is Scotty?
Scotty is the son of Clink secretary number 2.
Right. And now I got to say this. He does, and I know you're wondering if your father is the actual father of Scotty, but when you look at a picture of Scotty, he does look an awful lot like your dad.
Yeah, he does.
And he claims to be the son of your father and your half-brother, and he's doesn't appreciate the movie. He rejects the movie, but yet he's coming out with a website to try to...
Yeah, curious.
On the website is, you know, footage of Bob Crane, and somehow he procured this. The footage was left to him. He inherited it.
His mother.
His mom.
His mother celebrating her late husband.
The second
wife.
Right.
Has a decision to make when my dad is killed. Do all the tapes and photographs that she acquires from Scottsdale, from the apartment that I was living at with my dad because they were going through a divorce,
right,
from the house in Westwood where she was living, my dad moved out of. She has a decision to make after he's killed. Do I take all this material, X-rated porno tapes and stills.
Right.
Do I burn them? Do I put them in a safe? Do I put them in a bed of cement?
Right.
Years go by. No, you know what? I think I'll give them to my son so he can sell them on an X-rated website. That's a good way to celebrate my late husband and his father.
Meanwhile, I saw like part of my dad's sack once when I was 9, and I'm still in therapy. Could you imagine? Here's 7,000 hours and 4 million lineal feet of footage of your dad humping away, and you're going to watch that?
Yeah.
Was it affected you, Bob?
This website?
Yeah. I'm asking a serious question.
Yeah.
We have to go to break.
We
got
to take a break, but it's all very compelling stuff. And by the way, we'll go to break in 1 second. We usually take calls about screwed up teenagers on this show, but this encompasses and embodies a lot of the things that we talk about on this show, these kinds of relationships and these kinds of situations. So it's compelling to us. So
these are screwed up adults.
Well, this is what screwed up kids become. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. The hot ladies from That 70s Show going to be in here tomorrow night. Robert Crane is in here tonight. He is eldest son of Bob Crane,
slain
sitcom star who was also a sex addict. It was chronicled much of his activities and basically is the subject of the new movie Autofocus. He's portrayed by Greg Kinnear, and Willem Dafoe is also in this movie, and it's I've not seen the movie yet, but by all accounts, a very interesting and well done and dark in many ways movie. But when we left off, Drew,
asking Bob about how his dad's film experiences with women affected him. Did you see them when you were younger? Did they affect you the same emotionally? What's the impact been?
Yeah, I really found out about his activities when I was in college.
Mm-hmm. And you had no hint of it before that?
No, after my parents were divorced. We lived pretty much a Donna Reed family life out in Tarzana, California. It was my three kids, my mom, my dad, you know, the German Shepherd, the pool. You know, we had a great time. We'd Little League, you know, all the normal stuff, except he was a quote-unquote celebrity. He was on radio and then television. Outside of that, we had the normal life. Then my parents get divorced after 20 years, and he gets involved with the woman who played Clink's secretary. And from there, things changed. She had guaranteed him an open marriage and all this stuff, and it went south from there. I found out.
Back to you, though. You found out, how did it affect you?
In college. First of all, I have to say I didn't see the tapes.
You never saw them?
No, he never sat me down and went, Bobby, hey, look at this.
And you've never since seen them?
No.
No.
What he showed me was, for instance, he would be on the road doing a play, and he'd work with some hot chick, you know, and she would borrow the camera because it was a new toy back in the 60s and
70s. The video camera.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, my boyfriend's coming into town. They're in Columbus, Ohio, doing a play. And can I borrow the camera? Yeah. And then they'd make a copy of the tape, and instead of looking at the new Playboy, you know, my buddies and I and my dad back at his house or, you know, wherever, would sit down and look at the black and white reel-to-reel videotape. We'd go, wow, that's pretty cool, you know. And we didn't think it was college, you know, second, third year of college.
And what year is this? Early 70s?
This would be early 70s, yeah. And we didn't think it was dark or ominous or, ooh, Dad, he's got a problem.
Who would have guessed just a scant 19 years later that my father would go to the Radio Shack and buy a crappy Beta machine? Sock him right in the nuts for that.
Still, 19 years later.
According to the, you know, from to the Earth's calendar, yeah. Just a blink of the eye. That was nothing. Just
geological times, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad, he was electronics buff, too. Yeah. He still has the Radio Shack receiver that has the 8-track, the turntable, and the cassette all built into the same unit. You know, that's a good unit.
Same plastic
unit. The more
unit.
Crap you can pour into the same unit. And the speaker.
speakers that don't even give you the option of unattaching the cord.
Right.
They just go through a magic hole in the back, yeah, and they're soldered onto something. Nope. You got 6 feet. That's it. You want to put them on the other side of the room? Move the whole goddamn thing. There's no extensions, no nothing.
But Adam, maybe this explains something.
What an idiot.
Your dad is such an electronics buff. Maybe he's got a secret life he's leading.
Yeah, there you go.
My dad ain't even leading his life. He doesn't even have a first life that he's leading. Maybe, forget about his, a secret
maybe
life.
Maybe his secret life's depleting him, where he can't have a real life or can't let you know about it anyway.
Yeah, he does. It's true. He goes to bed.
I mean, you are his son. Come on.
Goes to bed about 9 o'clock at night.
So you think?
Yeah. Claims to get up at 6 a.m. and go out for a walk, and that's it.
Where does he walk?
Eat some around the block, then eat some Mueslix, then it's like time to take a nap. All right.
Well, that is life.
Same life as Robert's dad.
Same as yours, certainly.
Yeah. Same life. So,
Adam, I have to ask you now. Let's say you found out that your dad was going to bed at 9 o'clock because he was tired because he was making videotapes every day of conquests.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want those tapes out on a website for the world to look at, or
no,
would you want them destroyed?
No, they would go right in the coffin with him.
Right. Thank you.
That I would bury, and I would actually
have to throw him
out of the coffin because there wasn't enough room for him or the tapes, and I make the decision just the tapes are going in.
There you go.
Dad, you go next to the coffin.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm an atheist. We can do anything we want with the deceased. I could use my dad as a coffee table. I'd use him as an ottoman for
unfortunately, I think Adam would be so delighted to hear that his dad was doing something like that.
That would be great. I'd have like a carpal tunnel syndrome from high-fiving him. But anyway, yes, Robert has a... alleged half-brother, who I will say does look quite a bit like the father, who's living in Seattle, who's started a website, who is putting all of this actual footage onto this website, but yet condemns the movie, which, again, I find interesting, and I also find it interesting that his mother decided to hand over all the videotapes to the son, which it's almost incestuous. I mean, it's as bizarre as that is for me. Actually, we're used to incest. You know what I mean? It's almost less bizarre. Incest.
Right.
Are you with me?
Right.
Well, they are the Sante and Kenny Kimes of the internet.
Yeah. No, Drew, do you know what that is?
No.
That is the, now, is this the mother and son?
Yeah.
Grifters,
yes,
who pulled a lot of shenanigans.
Yeah.
Okay. Mother and son. All right, see that, Drew?
Yeah.
Al,
you're tuned in.
That's the smart one.
You're
that's Drew over there. It's the smart one,
buddy.
It's the smart one, everybody.
Tuned in.
Yep, go to college, everyone. Teach you how to learn. Teach you how to be smart.
Al,
you're 17.
Yeah, hi.
What's up?
I live in D.C., and I've been pretty sheltered all my life because my parents are pretty worried about like going out in the city, and you know, it's a pretty dangerous city and stuff, but so I have no experience with drugs and alcohol. And
all right, well, it's time you got started, baby. You've come to the right place.
Where are you going to school?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I don't have very much sexual experience either.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother, when he went to school, I guess because we were so sheltered, he really acted out, I guess, and he started drinking a lot. And
when he went off to college?
Yeah.
Right. You're worried that you may snap that way, too, huh?
Yeah.
Well. Mm.
Is that what you want to do?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be, like, you know, total, like, bummed out loser.
Well, do you feel suppressed? Do you feel like you've had the yearning to get out there and experience this stuff, and yet your parents haven't let you?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I stay home on Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah.
Like... And I mean, it's not like I'm not attractive or something, and,
right,
you know, I'm fairly attractive.
They require you to?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, try to get, you know, work on my studies and...
Friday night studies.
Why don't you talk to your mom about that? Maybe sort of have this discussion with her about getting some sort of balance going so you learn how to negotiate these sorts of things when you go away.
Yeah.
So while you have their guidance, you want to start practicing these things now.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's what I've been trying to do, and it's just sort of like...
And they've been preventing you from doing it, or you just haven't been able to do it?
Yeah, well, a little bit of both. More just, like, I've been prevented from it. You know, I go to a really small, like, private school, and sort of like a hippie type place, and there's a lot of drug use going on, and they don't want me hanging out with that type of crowd.
It seems like you ought to make an effort to form some other friends outside of school and start dating. Just find a way. Yeah. You're okay. Smart. Figure
well,
that
going
out.
Going off to college soon enough.
Hey, yeah.
Just keep an eye on yourself.
Okay.
You'll be fine. It's better this way, believe me.
Is there anything I've had a little experience with alcohol, but not a lot, and that's basically what I'm worried about the most.
Well, is there alcoholism in your family?
I think there's some alcoholism.
Do you think your brother's an alcoholic?
I think he has alcoholic tendencies.
Okay. Do you think you might have some momentum, or are you just afraid you might?
I'm just worried, just because I'm pretty good at keeping my boundaries. I have pretty strong morals and stuff.
Yeah, that's nothing to do with morals, in fact. But most alcoholics don't think in terms of controlling things. They think in terms of finding ways to make it work for them.
Yeah, if they thought of that, they wouldn't become alcoholics later.
Right.
I mean, actually functioning alcoholics. So we're not so worried about you, Al.
Okay.
We like the fact. It's just like we talked about earlier, the person who admits they're retarded is not retarded, and the person that worries about a problem with alcohol before they have a problem with alcohol is not the
usually
person we worry about with alcohol.
Not unless they can really see that they have a problem. There are people that sort of realize they've got some real momentum going, and they'll say, I have a problem. I know if I let this go, it's going to be an issue for me. I saw it happen to my brother. Her thing is, I'm worried that I'm going to get to a place where I might have a relationship that has momentum. That's not the way it works usually.
Darren?
Yeah.
You're 31.
Yeah.
What's up?
My question's for Dr. Drew. I have a problem. My wife has got a meth problem, and it's been going on for quite some time, apparently. I'm just barely finding out about it. She started out with prescription drugs for a long time, and in the last maybe 3 or 4 years, she's moved on to pot and I think a little bit of cocaine.
Didn't you say meth?
Meth, yeah, methamphetamine. The last year and a half, she's lost about 40 or 50 pounds. She's got the pick marks on her face, and she moved out about 2.5 months ago, left me with the 3 boys, and I've been in contact with her a little bit. I know she's hooked up with a guy right now who has got a pretty serious criminal history with drugs and violence, and she claims that she's only using, a couple of times a week. What I've learned about it, from reading on the net and things, is that that's not how it works. You use it all the time, every
well,
day.
Well, yeah, you actually only have to use it 3 or 4 times a week to get the serious biological consequences. So she doesn't have to be using it every day if she's been using it 3 or 4 times a week for years.
Okay.
So it's all addiction. And she's never been treated for addiction before?
She was in once in an outpatient program, but she wasn't really into it. She was real upset that she had to stand up and say, hey, my name is so-and-so.
No, she's got a really...
All right. Now, well, here's the question. Are you worried, obviously, about your 3 sons or 3 children?
I am. And I'm worried, what's going to happen to them. But I'm also, and I'm sure I'm going to get the lecture from you, Adam. But, I'd like to think that she could get help. I'd like to think that there's some way.
Yeah.
There is a lecture on that.
I'm not ready to throw 10 years of marriage away just quite yet.
All right. Well, here's the two pieces of advice.
Okay.
One is you're not still involved with her, so this doesn't apply quite as vividly as it would if you were still in a close marriage with her. But one thing that I've noticed in my experience gets people, the identified person, into treatment is if the important relationships in their life go to Al-Anon, get a sponsor, and start working steps. You don't put up with their BS in the same way, and they feel that as an abandonment, and they start flipping out about it. They start wanting to make change too. So that has an impact. Secondly, in terms of getting her to treatment, because without treatment, this is not getting better.
Right.
And this I mean comprehensive treatment, like a few months somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, the only way to get that is to find some leverage. By leverage, I mean people that can create consequences that she cares about, like her employer. Maybe you have access to the kids.
She doesn't have an employer.
Yeah, but I mean, things. If there's anything like that.
She does some of Adam's old work. She paints and contracts right now.
No.
Yeah.
No one uses speed in that world.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's yeah. not what
well,
I
look,
now.
Well, look, here's what you got to do. How long has she been out of the house?
About 3 months. The DCFS is involved because she made some really poor choices with the kids while I was out of town working about 4 months ago. So that kind of stuff's rolling. We went to court about a month ago, and you know how the legal system works. It was worse than anything I could have imagined.
Well,
yeah,
but
we're going back.
But if they can push the treatment issue, and anybody that can push it that has leverage over her, do it firmly.
All right, but listen, meanwhile, you have to try to get her to some help. On the other hand, you got to get custody of these kids.
Yeah, I have it.
And you got to start working on making a normal life for them.
Yeah, no, I've got full custody. I get to decide whether or not she even sees them, you know, which has been tough. I think I'm going to ask for a court liaison to make that decision.
You know, if it, again, it's a very simple thing here. You're using drugs, you don't see the kids. You're in treatment, you see the kids. That may be all it takes. You may hold the key right there.
Right, right. And the legal system does not work very well unless you owe them money. And then they're a finely tuned machine. Finely tuned, like a Swiss goddamn timepiece. You owe the Department of Motor Vehicles or the court system, you owe them a nickel. And these guys are a precision piece of Swiss engineering. They owe you money. They become a drunken, urine-soaked Mexican pinata. Those are the differences. They owe you nothing. You owe them, look out, baby. Look out. That's where the supercomputer goes to work. Other than that, it's a monkey with a bataka bat smacking an abacus. That's a computer they use when people owe you money or they need to do something for you. You're all guilty, by the way, here's how it works. Here's how the legal system works. Everyone is guilty in society, and the people that owe them money are more guilty. That's the way you pussies look at it. Oh, Jesus Christ. It's driving me nuts. Sons of bitches. Guy destroyed my car 8 years ago. We have no way of keeping track of... No way! No way of keeping track. Hey, if I get a warrant, I get pulled over. The cop's got it in his car! He's got it on his goddamn computer in his car! What do you mean you have no way? We have no way. Please, it's retarded. We're not. The abuse you get when you go into these places, you're all guilty. All of you.
Bob wishes to talk, Adam.
Sorry, go ahead, Bob. I'm fired up now.
There you are.
Adam, I think you should do a film with Jack Nicholson. I think the two of you together.
At least Bob gets at least Jack, he gets a bat and goes out and smashes some guy's windshield in. I mean, takes a pitching wedge and goes and whacks a guy's windshield of his car. At least he gets that satisfaction. I just have to watch my car be destroyed, and there's nothing we can do. There's no way. No, oh, we caught the guy. Yeah, no, we can't force him to do anything. Rory?
Yes?
You're 20. Yeah, and here's the deal. Uh-oh. Hold on one second. I got to say this. I've said this before, but I said to him, look, the guy owes me money. He's not paying. Go get him. Oh, that's impossible. We can't do that. I said to him, man, tell that to my buddy Ray. Mm-hmm. He was over at his mom's apartment. He owed you a-holes $6, and you showed up and dragged him out in his underpants. Yeah. Oh, you got no way of going. There's nothing they can do as far as justice for anybody who owes you anything. You owe them. If I took a penny and sawed it in half with a hacksaw and owed them one half of that, they'd kick my front door in. Hypocrites. People work for us.
No.
What?
No. Relax here.
Tired. Fired up now.
You're fine. Rory.
Here's Adam.
Rory, what's going on?
I have a question about brown semen.
Yeah.
I was wondering what can cause that.
Blood.
Blood.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What would be the source of that? Just
The body. Yeah, it's got to come from the body somewhere.
It's not uncommon for semen to have some blood in it. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it's something worth getting checked out.
Okay.
All right.
That's it.
Okay, thank you.
Not so bad, the blood and the semen, right?
Right.
Blood in the urine, not so bad. Blood in the stool, bad.
Blood in the urine is bad, too.
Well, not as bad as the stool.
I would go, I would go stool, urine, semen.
Right, that's the way I like it.
Yeah. In that order.
Yeah, like when I sit down at a nice restaurant, that's how I can tell the forks. They got the three forks. It's one outside.
Stool.
Furthest, stool. And the one in the middle, a urine. And the one closest to you will be semen.
Sometimes brown.
Yeah, sometimes it's a sputum.
Sputum,
it's the bile spoon.
No, a sputum and bile are the ones up at the top, the plate.
Plate. Yeah. I rarely get out. I know. Elbows on the table, using the fecal fork to eat the salad. It's people rolling their eyes.
Next caller!
Shut up, Anderson. Andrew?
Yeah.
You're 15?
Yes, I am.
What's up?
I was wondering if, like, because I've had a girlfriend for about a year, and I was wondering if you could, like, we've been having sex, like, kind of, like...
Now?
Yeah.
Sounds like you're doing it now.
We've been, like, no, not now.
Oh, okay.
We've been having sex, like constant, kind of, throughout...
Well, that would be now, too, right?
Oh, well, I thought you meant, like, right now, like...
Oh, I see, now.
Well, that's
now.
No, we're not like that, but, I was just wondering if, like, sometimes, like, when I go and put it in, and if we haven't done it in a while, it's kind of loose, and it just, like, all of a sudden goes right in. And then, like, sometimes it's, like, really tight if we haven't done it for a while.
That is the difference between her being into it and being not so into it.
Is that the... Is she cheating on me? That's my question.
No.
Yeah.
Einstein, no.
No.
It's,
no.
If she's into it, that's more lubrication, and that's what...
How would the cheating work? Has she been loosened up?
What happened is, like, we went on a break, like, a couple months ago, and I found out she kissed this one guy, and she admitted to it and everything. And then, like, he went up to my friend and told my friend that...
What is that?
Our callers are so goddamn stupid. They're just so stupid. Let's just stop pretending they're not stupid with the F word right onto the phone, right onto the national radio show.
He had at least 10 other words he could have used, right?
Yes.
All of which most usual human restraint would have put the other 9 ahead of that one.
Yes, yes. All right, we're going to take a break because here's my problem. I talk, and when I talk, I get fired up, and because there's no air conditioning in here, I end up getting hot, and then we have to take a break. Yeah. So,
I need some air in here.
All right. Robert Crane is our guest tonight. He's here talking about Autofocus, new movie, which is out as we speak, and we'll be right back after this. Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Robert Crane is our guest tonight.
Nice to be here.
Good to see you again, Robert. I haven't seen Robert, I believe, since Jimmy and I did an interview with him. I think we ran into him maybe a time or two after that.
Fabulous interview with you and Jimmy for Playboy, launching the Man Show.
And Robert, thank you. Robert is... I think he's complimenting himself, though, when he says fabulous interview.
Of course. He's not talking about you.
Oh, no, no, no.
I remember being delightful, though. So, Robert is also has penned the 20 questions section of this month's Playboy, or it's out on newsstands as we speak. Greg Kinnear, who stars in the movie Autofocus, which is about Robert's father, loosely, Bob Crane. All right. Eddie,
you sleeping?
No.
Oh, almost though, huh?
Almost.
17. What's up, Stoner?
Yeah, you guys rock though, first of all.
Thank you.
Eddie.
Yeah, have you guys ever heard of NyQuil?
Yeah, NyQuil?
Yeah.
The over-the-counter cold medicine?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Can't say that we're... Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom uses it on my 8-year-old sister.
Your 8-year-old sister?
Yeah, because to reduce her hyperactiveness. And I was wondering if that's, like, bad for her or something?
Yeah, it's bad for her. There are stimulants in there that can affect her health, theoretically. Some of the things that they recently took out of cold medicines because it could cause strokes and heart attacks, that some of the stuff that's in NyQuil, I'm not sure, may be sort of implicated in those sorts of ways. But more importantly, she, and that's again for chronic, regular use of NyQuil, it's not good for you. Occasional use, it's not a big deal. But if she has ADD or some sort of hyperactivity disorder, that needs to be diagnosed, and then that needs to be treated. Not your mom screwing around with, a Curandero or something.
Not a bad home remedy, though, to knock the kid down late at night, run around. Could hurt themselves, Drew.
I mean, she's only done it a couple of times, not very often.
How do you know about it? Did she tell you about it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There goes Drew.
Got it.
Yeah, I didn't think it was such a big deal, but I just wanted to know.
Well, look, she's done it a couple of times. It's not a big deal, but if it's basically your mom becomes the doctor and she's treating your sister, then it becomes a big deal.
It's a big deal if she's, has a disorder and your mom's trying to treat it without proper supervision, or if your mom's giving chemicals to your sister because she can't handle her, that's a problem.
You're calling from East L.A.?
Yeah.
So I'm guessing your mom doesn't have her own physician that lives in the house with you?
No.
You got to go over to County USC and get in line?
No.
I mean, where do you go?
Kaiser? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always curious about the Permanente part of that title. You'll never leave. You'll come in, you'll never leave.
Yeah, I have another question.
I don't understand.
Yeah, what is up, Eddie?
Yeah, Adam?
Yeah.
Is that your voice I hear on those new Burger King commercials?
That's me.
Okay, I didn't know for sure.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Yeah, it's cool how you're doing that.
Yeah, thanks. I'm doing what I can.
Yeah. Cool what you're doing for Burger King, Adam. That's good.
Yeah. I hate the rainforest, I hate cows, and I love money. So, you know, it worked out, and I love flame broiling. Like that as a concept. I had a great, I passed through East L.A. You know, I went down to the Hepatitis C fundraiser in Hawthorne today. Mm-hmm. Kid Rock was there and Pam Anderson. And, by the way, spoke to them and her and stuff and tried to get her on the show. But coming home, I had a chance to get off the freeway and drive around USC and downtown. Beautiful, beautiful country.
I was there today for a football game.
Beautiful
kids,
country.
Kids
beautiful
played East L.A.
Lost. Oh, really?
A devastating defeat.
Oh, good. Well, picture of Pam Anderson in this magazine. Is that what I'm looking at?
Current Playboy.
Yep, that's her, all right. That's her naked. I'm bored of seeing her naked, though. I'd rather see Kid Rock naked. Break it up a little bit. All right, let's move forward. And I want to talk about something real quick, though. There's no gas stations in downtown L.A., I've now discovered. Because
that's true.
I got one of these things, and if anyone manufactures automobiles and you're listening to me right now, perhaps you're in Germany or Japan, where I like to buy most of my automobiles, please work out this little thing. Drew, I don't know if you've suffered from this, or Robert, I don't know if you have this here, but I got this gauge in the car, the little computer thing where you can set it to how many miles you have left before you run out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
This, to me, is one of the greatest inventions of the last 5 years when it comes to automobiles, because obviously, the gauge is pegged on E. You got nothing left, but I like to know, do you got 31 miles left, or do you have 4 miles left?
Right.
And the gauge will be pegged on E if you have either one of those. It doesn't move much. It's not an exact science. As a matter of fact, the gauge for the gas goes a little lower than empty.
Always.
Which I don't like.
Always.
I don't appreciate that. I owe gas now. The car only holds 16 gallons, but I'm going to pump 20 into it next time. I don't understand how that works, but the gauge, no good for that. But this mileage thing, this is a godsend. So I'm driving back from Hawthorne, mm-hmm. and I punch it. Now, the gauge is saying, hey, brother, it's time to get gas, but I'm in Hawthorne. Not the world's greatest place to stop and get gas. So I think, let's look at the gauge. 37 miles. Uh-huh. So I'm thinking, you know what? I can make it home.
Uh-huh.
Get on the freeway, and I'm going down the 110. And
I know what's
going
to happen.
19 miles. And I'm thinking, all right, 19. I'm about 6-7 miles from my off-ramp. I'll just get it down at the 76 at the bottom of the hill there.
Did it miss?
Now it flatlines.
Yeah.
Now it goes from 19 to flatline.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I break out in a cold sweat because the gauge is pegged on sub-E, below E. And now, mileage left, flatline. It's literally just a line that goes across the thing. It's you're on your own, is what it's saying. And now, I'm in the middle of downtown L.A., and I'm realizing, hey, this is flatline. I'm going to run out of gas on the freeway here. Now, I pull off the freeway, and I'm in, like, Koreatown. And I'm screwed because apparently these people, either they use a rickshaw, I don't know what they use, whatever it is, it does not use gas.
I believe Chinatown has gas.
Driving a circle for an hour, ironically using more gas than it would have taken for me to actually stay on the freeway and get home panicking the whole time. And, yes, here I am. All right, let's talk to Brian, who's 21. Brian?
Hey.
Hey.
I just wanted to say, I find it amazing that Anderson has the inability to dump out when a 15-year-old says sucking a D.
Sucking dick's fine, buddy.
But
yeah, can say that.
When anyone mentions a website, he's quick on the button with that.
All right.
For a shout-out.
Hey, Brian?
Yeah.
First off, you can't cite as an example something you can say on the radio and then accuse him of not doing his job.
Oh, I thought you couldn't.
Right. And I agree it's not something we like to dwell on here, the suck and the D conversation, but apparently is legal and will not get our license taken away for saying it. And why shouldn't he shut down websites and shout-outs for websites?
If he didn't, everyone would be calling all the time and doing that.
But it seems like that's all his energy is towards, and he misses the dump sometimes.
No, you miss all the ones he gets. You don't even know about it.
What do you mean?
There's many, many, many things that don't get through because you don't hear it. And tonight there's been, what, three already?
Yeah, plus and, Drew used the N-word earlier on. I thought we were during the break. It was anyway, had to do the, some help around his house. The point is Anderson was quick on that dump, too.
The one you're referring to, he specifically intended not to dump.
Okay.
All right.
I guess that's what you
get.
Shut up! Hold on. I got to make sure Brian is satisfied. Brian, are you good?
Yeah, I'm all right.
That's satisfactory?
Is that what you get when you're mainlining vodka?
Yes.
No,
yes.
That's what you make when you... That's why he gets the big box.
Yes, listen. I don't like Anderson either, but for totally different reasons. And I will defend him. No, Anderson is starting to grow on me. And I will not tolerate someone calling this show and assassinating his character.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, be careful, Anderson.
Stalk the
sucking
Sasha.
You in.
Dick.
Sasha.
Hello.
You're 29.
How are you?
Yeah. Hold on a second. There's one problem we always run into whenever we try to leave the doors open in the studio.
Yeah, people have a party out here.
Phone screener Brian has got a voice like he's got a megaphone for a mouth. I can always hear him screaming up and down the hall. So there we go. Sasha, go ahead.
Hi. I was calling because my question was, I'm an escort and in the Bay Area / Sacramento, and I have a hard time dating. And my question is, how can I date and still do this business? Mm-hmm. I've tried to meet men and tell them honestly what I do. And in the beginning, they're, sure, we're okay with it. And then a few weeks later, they are not okay with it.
Yeah, well, what kind of escort? How does it work? Is it prostitute, well, essentially?
I'm sorry?
Is it essentially you're a prostitute?
I'm an escort.
Well, you shut up with that stuff. Now tell me how it works. I'll hang up on you.
Well, I mean, people call me up and they invite me over to the hotel room.
And you have sex with them.
Not everybody, but I mean, it's an unsaid.
Not everybody, Adam. You got
right.
That?
What?
Not everybody.
Right. You got one. You got one guy who was from the Dominican Republic who liked to beat off while you masturbate. That was the one time you didn't actually get poked.
There are some guys that prefer me just to give them head, and that's fine because that's my specialty.
All right. Well, I was all wrong. All right. That's your specialty?
Yeah, actually. So.
All right. Listen, I'm sorry we got off on the wrong foot, by the way.
But anyway,
that's my specialty, too. Receiving oral is my specialty. Why can't that be my specialty? Hey, ladies. Perhaps you've not heard of my reputation of holding very still while I receive oral.
No, really. How do you date in this business? I
want to
know that.
Oh, well, listen. Sasha, obviously you have... You have emotional problems.
Major issues.
Major.
So the reason you're having trouble dating is really not because of what you do. It's what's up with you that makes you do what you do that makes you have problems.
What has motivated you to do what you do, not the fact that you're
doing
it.
Well, I have a child, obviously. I mean, not obviously, but I have a child.
Sure.
And I'm stuck in my situation, to be honest with you.
Right.
I can't, get out of it. When you make as much as you do, it's hard to go to a $10 an hour job, you know?
Right. There's no way you could ever get out of prostitution. Impossible.
Well, I can, but it's not
physically,
easy.
Mathematically. How much are you making a week?
About $4,000.
About $4,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And you...
And that's the low end.
That's a bad week for you.
That's an average week.
Average week. So average week is the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Now you do this, how many times a week do you five times a week?
5 days a week.
5 days a week. And how many clients will you see in a night?
I will never see more than four.
Four in a night. Oh, well, she holds it at four. She has her limits, Adam.
Right.
Her thing is
she can never receive more than 1 meter of penis combined. That's how my sister used to do it. So you could have one guy with a 39-inch dork, or it could be broken up into, 700 Japanese guys. However it works, 1 meter. That's how it works.
Sasha, aren't you worried about getting disease?
I actually get tested every 6 weeks.
Yeah, that doesn't prevent you from getting disease.
It does not prevent me, but I'm very safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell the guys that I date this that I'm very safe.
So
other than oral, I mean, because I give bare oral, but that's, but I'm very careful. I mean, I do that. That's the only thing that I do that's bare. But everything else is covered.
All right, well, oral sex can transmit STDs too, right?
I mean, and my my doctors have said that, but they have also, and this is a question I have for you also, because my doctors have told me that it's very rare. I mean, you can get it.
It's rare if you're sort of maintaining a normal sex life.
The whole stomach aspect.
Did you tell them you were seeing four different guys a night?
No.
Okay, you tell them that, and it will be a different statistical issue.
Yeah, they think you're with one insurance salesman twice a week.
Okay. That's a totally, totally, Sasha, you're putting yourself in grave danger.
Yeah. Okay, now listen, Sasha.
Now, about
listen,
the issue.
So, quiet down. Listen to me. You got a kid. You're going to destroy this kid's life. You hear me? You're going to have to get creative. It's not all about money. Better to have a parent that has less money and more morals than a prostitute mom with all the money in the world.
And it's not even about morals. It's about...
Well, for lack of a better term,
yeah,
I'm just saying.
Being constituted emotionally.
Yes. Sasha, you get some help. Forget about dating. Focus on your kid and focus on getting out of that business. All right?
I've tried. I have tried three times to quit. And
all right. Well, you got to get some therapy for whatever abuse you suffered or whatever led you into this.
I haven't suffered any abuse.
Something went wrong.
Trauma.
You better pray it was abuse. Otherwise, you got a tumor in your head. So it's brain tumor or abuse? Which is it?
Well, I mean,
it wasn't
a brain tumor, but I mean, there's things that happened in my past.
Well, right. That's what we're talking about.
I've been abused.
Well, those things were traumatizing. Whatever other word you want to use, it's all the same to you. It's trauma. And that trauma needs to be dealt with.
All right.
Okay.
Take care of your kid.
You're just reenacting the traumas over and over and over.
Take care of your kid, would you please?
I'm a very good mom.
I know. Yeah. Very good prostitute mom. Doesn't
just
work
because
that
I
way.
Do what I do doesn't mean I'm not a good mom.
No, it doesn't mean you don't change the diapers and give them the appy juice and the little bottle that Drew should be drinking off of because he's not old enough to handle a mug or possibly too old.
Well,
I never thought about that.
So
but the point is he's got a prostitute for mom or she has a prostitute for mom, and eventually that's going to exact its toll.
I know.
Believe me, you're 29. You've not suffered any abuse. You're 29. You're not stupid. Get out then. Figure it out.
She has that trauma, though.
Of course.
I figured it out. It's about $250 a pop.
The, Oh, really?
$1,000 a night, 4 or 5 nights a week. Yeah.
Robert's doing some math. And Robert's breaking that into, let's see. How much I get paid a word when I write one of these essays?
No, she's going to Sacramento. Do I have anything to do in Sacramento?
Sacramento. I'll be up there plugging autofocus. And that's. It's about 1,300 words for me. Yeah. Okay. That's all it is. It's not prostitution. It's just an exchange of words. Maybe I'll write her a little essay and she'll give me a freebie.
Yeah.
A barter. We'll trade out. All right. Well, I'll do like 14 questions with her. 20 be too much. 12 not enough. Well, we'll see how she blows. We'll leave it open. Somewhere between 12 and 14 questions. Robert Crane, our guest tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Buddy, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew over there. Robert Crane is our guest tonight. I don't want to get into who Robert Crane is because that means you just tuned in this show 10 seconds ago, so screw you. But Autofocus is the name of the movie that he's discussing tonight. And like I said, I saw, Yeah, and that's Siskel Ebert and Roper. Two thumbs up. Mm-hmm. And they're passionate men when it comes to film reviewing.
Well, I find it interesting.
You don't see it too much.
What Bob was saying is that his dad, Bob Crane, is merely the vehicle for this director's exploration of his ideas about sin and society
Absolutely.
And sexual deviancy and celebrity.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Temptation. Yeah.
Which is interesting. So it really isn't about your dad. Your dad's just a symbol that he's taken over.
Well, it's how Paul Schrader got the money to make the movie.
Huh.
And
right.
And then kind of afterward. And I like Paul Schrader. That's why I became involved in the film as a co-technical advisor with Mark Dawson. But now it's kind of like, Bob Crane was a minor, bland television personality of the 60s. And, you know, gee, I know I'm biased, but I didn't think of my dad as bland or, you know.
Well,
he was on a show that's still playing, you know, years later.
And it was a different era back then. If you go back, I mean, the celebrities were, the TV celebrities were celebrities.
I mean, what I'm saying is look at the ratings from the 60s and from the 70s.
Right.
Shows in the top 10 getting a 24 share, 25 share, that got 30 share, and stuff like that. I mean, it's like one out of three people in the entire country is watching this show.
Right.
Now there's, you know, whatever, whether it's Ozzy, the Osbournes or Sopranos, you look at these ratings, sevens.
Yeah.
Sixes, fives, 11s.
Are huge.
This is a great rating.
Two
great,
good ratings.
Great numbers, yes. We've taken this pie that we used to have to whack up into three or four pieces and whacked it up into slivers so thin you could see through it. So back then, yes, everybody in America knew Bob Crane.
Did you detect a little jealousy in Adam's
God
voice?
Damn it. Crank Yankers and a mansion. Love, I still get no goddamn respect.
Does that what?
Monique?
Hello?
You're 18?
Yeah.
What's up?
I sort of had, like, two questions.
I'm telling you, a 0.3 share is a goddamn respectable rating in this day and age.
Is it Crank Yankers or Man Show?
It's combined.
I see.
Both get a 0.5. I can't even do the math. No, they do. How dare you, Drew? These are successful shows. Go ahead.
1.5.
Yay! Yay! Well, they want more. They always want more. Go ahead, Monique.
Okay, because, like, I drink a lot. And most of the time I drink until I, like, pass out.
How long has this been going on for?
Like, I've been drinking since I was 13.
Are you ready to do something about this?
Oh, like, I don't know.
Make some change, maybe?
Yeah, I, like, had, like, two questions, though.
All right.
Because, my dad used to drink a lot when I was little.
Of course, that's why you drink a lot. You inherit that. You get that gene from your dad. And then also you add to that the trauma of being in a highly chaotic family system with an alcoholic. That sort of fuels the need to drink a little bit.
Yeah, he stopped drinking, though, when I was younger, but mm-hmm. I don't know, I kept drinking, though.
All right, well, did he go to AA, or did he switch to something else?
He went to church.
To church, all right.
Okay.
Sometimes that works.
Don't believe in God, though.
All right, well, you don't need to believe in God. You can still quit drinking.
Yeah, and, like, I have, like, another question, though.
Right.
Like, if something bad happens to you when you're young, is it, like, possible that you forget, yourself forget?
Well, that you can make yourself forget, you can just forget, but it's not possible for it not to have an effect on you. It gets sort of wired into what we call implicit memory. It's left behind as a residual in your brain. And that may well be why you're drinking so much, that sort of motivates the drinking. And then once you sort of cross a threshold, the reward system in your brain is slightly different because you've inherited that from your dad, and that then perpetuates the drinking even when you're prepared to stop it.
All right, what's the difference between implicit memory and explicit memory?
Explicit memory is what you think of in terms of remembering what you just saw in the Playboy magazine that you read.
Stuff you're conscious of.
You're conscious of. It's more cognitive
implicit
memory.
Means it's sort of there and affecting your behavior, but you're not aware of it.
You're not right. You're
that's
not conscious
what I like. That's my favorite kind of memory.
Implicit?
Yeah, only implicit, man.
Yeah, that's because that's the one that makes you masturbate so much. Right? Seriously.
Four times a day is not
and that's
so
why you
much
like
in
it.
My
that's
circles.
Why it works for you.
In my circles.
I know.
Jerks. In my circles, yes.
Maybe your circle of jerks, there's lots of implicit memories. You see what I'm saying?
How dare you
These
say
are the same jerks that throw crap on each other.
How dare you say circle and jerk in the same sentence when referring to my friends? All right. So, Emily, get some help. That's what you got to do. Go to AA. Just throw yourself on
you
the mercy.
You got to go
please.
AA. Get a sponsor and just,
don't get
throw
pregnant.
Yourself into the process.
Sam.
Yes.
You got a question for Robert?
I sure do. Robert, I was just wondering how you can say that your brother does, half-brother Scotty looks like your dad, but at the same time imply he's not your dad's son. I mean, why are you saying that, man? That's kind of cold.
That is... That's an interesting, I don't want to put you on the spot, but yes, he does look a lot like your father, Bob Crane.
He does, and I'd like to ask Dr. Drew about having a vasectomy and the percentage of times it would leak. Is that what it's called?
They recanalize. They can.
It's possible.
It's possible. I'd put it less than 5%. It depends how the vasectomy was done. These days, they'll do three subsequent checks. And if they do that third one, it approaches zero. And that's over like 6 or 12 months, they'll check these. If you didn't have those checks, sometimes they recanalize and get away, and that's that. It's possible.
Well, now, is there DNA? Can you do DNA testing?
I guess you could. You know, Scotty's challenged me, and I've challenged him. And, you know, it's just a sordid... ugly affair. All I'm saying, answering the caller,
All I'm saying is that my dad had a vasectomy while he was married to my mom, and then before he got married to his second wife, she announced to him that she was pregnant.
Right.
That's
but,
all.
But there's an inference that could be made, or that you're making from this.
And you guys ought to get the DNA test just to sort of put that part to rest.
Well, it's academic in a certain sense. He has this footage of your father. He's seen fit to sell it over the internet.
Yeah.
And I don't know what could be done about it. I mean, the horse is out of the barn, as they say.
It was out 24 years ago when his mother, who was divorcing my dad at that time, leaked out all this information to the press while she was in the middle of the divorce. That's when it actually started.
Yeah, so is your contention that we might not even be having... I mean, if your mother did not leak this information out and destroyed the tapes, your mother, but the second wife,
right,
destroyed the tapes and leaked it, we'd never be having this conversation.
No.
You wouldn't be here.
Probably not.
But you'd still be alive, right?
That's
yeah,
true.
Okay. But in my mind, yeah, you'd be dead. Oh, no, but wait. I would remember you implicitly from
the Playboy interview.
From the, yeah, explicitly. Yeah. From the Playboy interviews.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, everybody. We're on a show. Autofocus is the name of the film. It has been getting great reviews, and it is out in... semi-wide release as we speak. I want to thank Robert Crane for coming in here. Good to see you again.
Great seeing you, both of you.
I hope to see you again when I do one question with Playboy's 20
each.
Questions.
Why don't we do 10 each?
But Drew, you're no longer a draw.
Yeah, you're right. I'll get you back on TV.
But me?
Yeah.
Now, that merits an interview.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah, okay.
Give me the F out of here. Yeah. So, until next time, it's Adam Kroll for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
Creek. Yep, we live right down by Rabbit Creek.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Wilkins Ingold. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.